This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
The voice of Anna DeVlantis, or as I like to call her, the other Greek, and DeVlantis will be with Roe in Iowa at the caucuses on Monday afternoon. You're going to be on with Roe and Anna as well.
Yes.
And we'll be there Monday and Tuesday morning. As we are, and I believe this to be true, I believe we are the only Chicago outlet who is putting an entire show there.
Mm-hmm. Two shows.
Well, two shows there. That's right. So it's going to be a big deal. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to it. Donald Trump has already agreed to boycott the show both days, though we are going to continue to ask, and we'll see what happens. And then the following week, of course, is New Hampshire. And New Hampshire is news today of a different reason. It is a sad anniversary. It was 30 years ago today that the Challenger disaster happened. And Kristen McAuliffe was a school teacher from New Hampshire who happened to be really excited about the shuttle program. And several years earlier, there was a contest for a teacher in space. Kristen McAuliffe eventually emerged as the winner. Mm-hmm. Every school kid in America was caught up in it. America was caught up in it in general. And I'm sure you remember, you were in eighth grade, right?
I was in eighth grade, yeah, and they brought all of the televisions in, you know, on those wheel carts that they would wheel in, and we were so excited to watch. And our teacher, Mrs. Pagori, she was like a friend of a friend of a friend of Kristen McAuliffe, so it was just the excitement. And, you know, we were at Gerling Junior High in Orland, and they wheeled it in, and we were so excited to watch it. And then that happened. It was just it was horrific.
Fairly clear within about a minute that there was a catastrophic accident. As a matter of fact, the PA from NASA references that, that there is a I don't know what I don't remember the verbiage, but catastrophic failure, I think, is the term that was used at the time. Did they shut the TV off so you guys couldn't see it?
No, we watched a little bit, and they did eventually pull the TVs out of the room. But then we discussed it, and they brought, actually, we had guidance counselors who came in and were explaining what had happened, because it was seventh and eighth graders.
Yeah, in eighth grade, I mean,
Know what's going on.
In eighth grade,
yeah.
You have a concept of life and death.
Of course.
I know in elementary schools all over it, and there were tons of little kids who were actually on the scene at Cape Canaveral that morning because of the nature of the school thing. So it was a tragedy all over. That night, Ronald Reagan was scheduled to do the State of the Union address, and they had put the State of the Union address off briefly on the calendar to tie it in with this because it was such a triumphant moment. And instead, he addressed the nation from the White House. We're going to play that speech almost in its entirety because it's one of the great speeches of all time. As Reagan remembers those who died, including Kristen McAuliffe. But that was 30 years ago today. 30 years ago, Dave. I was on the air in Baltimore. I was, 24 years old, I guess. And I just remember the same thing everybody else remembered. You're just stunned. It was just a jaw dropper because the space shuttle program had become so routine and so automatic that we weren't even paying attention to it. Right. And if not for the Kristen McAuliffe thing, which was a brilliant, I don't want to call it stunt because it cheapens it, but it was a brilliant way for NASA to draw interest back into the program.
It was good publicity. Very good publicity.
It was great publicity and allowed the program to continue to be funded at the levels that NASA needed. David, were you here at that point?
Yes. And in fact, I had just gotten back the day before with the Bears
from
the Super Bowl, and they had had the parade down LaSalle Street or through the loop after coming back after the plane landed. They took us on buses right to the parade route.
Sure.
And it was very cold, and I was actually getting ready to go back. I had left my car at Midway Airport before I went to New Orleans, so I was getting ready to leave. I remember this so vividly. I was getting ready to leave for the airport. My wife was going to drive me to get my car, and I'm watching this on TV and can't believe it. And it was like the feeling in this city went from this unbelievable euphoria,
jubilation,
over the Super Bowl, to people were just stunned. It was amazing to change in 24 hours.
And the Reagan speech, I know you remember as well, because it's the three-channel universe. Nobody was going, what time is The Real Housewives on?
Right.
Everybody watched it. So here is the majority of the Reagan statement from the White House on that night 30 years ago, from the Oval Office, 30 years ago tonight, remembering the Challenger disaster when the speech was given, or this moment was given, I guess. It was only a few hours before, and the State of the Union was postponed so that he could make this statement instead.
We mourn seven heroes: Michael Smith, Dick Scobee, Judith Resnick, Ronald McNair, Ellison Onizuka, Gregory Jarvis, and Krista McAuliffe. We mourn their loss as a nation together. The families of the seven, we cannot bear as you do the full impact of this tragedy. But we feel the loss, and we're thinking about you so very much. Your loved ones were daring and brave, and they had that special grace, that special spirit that says, give me a challenge, and I'll meet it with joy. They had a hunger to explore the universe and discover its truths. They wished to serve, and they did. They served all of us. We've grown used to wonders in this century. It's hard to dazzle us. But for 25 years, the United States Space Program has been doing just that. We've grown used to the idea of space, and perhaps we forget that we've only just begun. We're still pioneers. They, the members of the Challenger crew, were pioneers. And I want to say something to the schoolchildren of America who were watching the live coverage of the shuttle's takeoff. I know it's hard to understand, but sometimes painful things like this happen. It's all part of the process of exploration and discovery. It's all part of taking a chance and expanding man's horizons. The future doesn't belong to the faint-hearted. It belongs to the brave. The Challenger crew was pulling us into the future, and we'll continue to follow them. I've always had great faith in and respect for our space program, and what happened today does nothing to diminish it. We don't hide our space program. We don't keep secrets and cover things up. We do it all up front and in public. That's the way freedom is, and we wouldn't change it for a minute. We'll continue our quest in space. There will be more shuttle flights and more shuttle crews, and yes, more volunteers, more civilians, more teachers in space. Nothing ends here. Our hopes and our journeys continue. I want to add that I wish I could talk to every man and woman who works for NASA or who worked on this mission and tell them, your dedication and professionalism have moved and impressed us for decades, and we know of your anguish. We share it. There's a coincidence today. On this day, 390 years ago, the great explorer Sir Francis Drake died aboard ship off the coast of Panama. In his lifetime, the great frontiers were the oceans, and a historian later said he lived by the sea, died on it, and was buried in it. Well, today, we can say of the Challenger crew, their dedication was, like Drake's, complete. The crew of the Space Shuttle Challenger honored us for the manner in which they lived their lives. We will never forget them, nor the last time we saw them, this morning, as they prepared for their journey and waved goodbye and slipped the surly bonds of Earth to touch the face of God. Thank you.
.623, Nick DiGilio joins us on Thursdays. Any decent movies opening this weekend?
Well, there's a big one called The Finest Hours. This is with Casey Affleck, and it's based on the true story of the U.S. Coast Guard trying to rescue this commercial tanker called the SS Pendleton from disaster. I've not seen it, but from what I've heard, the special effects are amazing. Pixar, in fact, did the special effects for it. But the script is kind of lacking, so it's kind of one-dimensional, but with great special effects. So there's that one.
Is that like a Perfect Storm kind of story?
That's exactly what it is. It's like the Perfect Storm. I don't know historically the outcome of that. We all know what happened at the end of the Perfect Storm and what happened in that. But it's based on this, and it's a period piece from 1950. It takes place in 1952. It's got a pretty good cast. From what I hear, the effects will blow you away.
You know, Chris Pine is a terrific actor. Chris Pine can do funny. He can do serious, and he's got to do serious in this. We'll see if he can pull it off. But he's one of these guys. He's almost like too good-looking a dude to be taken seriously a lot of times.
I agree. You know which movie I liked him in a lot? Now I'm going to blank on the name. Him and Denzel Washington on the train.
The train.
Unstoppable.
The train they had to stop that before it blew up a small town in Pennsylvania.
I thought it was terrific.
That old story that we hear all the time.
Yeah.
What else is opening?
Kung Fu. There's a
Kung Fu Panda.
Kung Fu Panda 3. I enjoyed the first one very much, didn't like the second one, and I hear, you know, the third one is more of the same. So, you know, the kids like the first two. I'm sure this one will be fine. I'm going to see that this weekend. And then, I mean, I don't even know what to begin here. 50 Shades of Black with Marlon Wayans doing his wacky takeoff on 50 Shades of Grey.
Marlon's been on the show many times. Very funny guy. And I don't know if he's getting bad offers or whatever. He does really terrible.
No, he writes these movies. He does. So he's got no one.
You know, so it's like an Adam Sandler sort of thing. You got no one to blame but yourself.
Absolutely. And then a movie that seems to be hidden. They're not advertising it very much. I haven't seen anybody who's in it doing a lot of press for it, which is not a good thing. But if you look at the credits, you look at who's in it, it's called Jane Got a Gun. And it stars Natalie Portman in the Old West. And she needs help from her ex-fiance, played by Joel Edgerton. And this really nasty outlaw comes to town with a gang of killers. And the gang of killers is led by Ewan McGregor. So we're talking about a great cast.
Yeah, really?
We're talking about a good idea, and it's directed by Gavin O'Connor. Gavin O'Connor directed a tremendous movie from a few years ago called Warrior with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton. So, I mean, you know, this is a good pedigree here, a lot of really talented people, but they're hiding it, which is never a good sign.
And not a good sign. Now, we're short on time here, but I know you've got several short films, and this is a category that usually provides great entertainment, and people never see it. But for people in Chicago, they want to see some of the Oscar-nominated short films. What do they do?
You know, a lot of people are completists when the Oscar nominations come out, and they want to fill out their ballot if there's a chance of them winning some money. You know, over the years, you were never really able to see the animated short films or the live-action short films. Now, every year at the Landmark Century Center Cinema in Chicago at Clark and Diversey, they do a program where they show all the Oscar-nominated shorts. They have all the nominated animated movies and all the nominated short live-action movies. You can go to the website at Landmark to get all the showtimes for each program, the program that consists of the animated and the live-action. And I just want to mention a couple of animated ones that I've seen. Sanjay's Super Team is from Pixar, and it's really, really good. But the one that is absolutely beautiful, and it's in the animated program, is a thing called World of Tomorrow, which is one of the most beautifully gorgeous animated films I've seen, and I'm thrilled that it's getting the press that it deserves, and I really think it's going to win in the category for best animated short film. So, and then the live action short movies, there's a lot of interesting ones. There's one called Stutterer, which is pretty fascinating. A very funny film called Ave Maria, which has an unfunny title, and then some really serious works as well. But they're all being showcased. And I think it's great because for years you never got to see these short films. I mean, it wasn't until, you know, 7-6 years ago where people began, you know, to have access to see these short movies that are nominated for documentaries. And if you want to see them on the big screen, the Landmark Century Cinema at Clark and Diversey is showing the animated shorts and live action movies all week.
All right, buddy. Thanks for that. Enjoy your weekend.
You got it. Thank you, buddy. See
that's you. Nick DiGilio. You can hear Nick every night, of course, and he's all over social media at Nick D Show.
From here, where do I go? Going to Iowa. What am I going to do there? Who the hell knows? We're going to raise, you know what we're going to do? We're going to raise a lot of money for the vets. That's what we're going to do.
If he's unwilling to stand on the debate stage with the other candidates, then I would like to invite Donald right now to engage in a one-on-one debate with me anytime between now and the Iowa caucus.
The president himself noted that he was not a big fan of participating in presidential debates, but he never backed out of a debate 2 days before it was scheduled to be held.
Josh Earnest, I should turn my microphone off. Josh Earnest, Ted Cruz, and of course Donald Trump. And we'll get to all that in just a second. Chuck Todd joins us from Meet the Press. Chuck Todd at Chuck Todd on social media. Chuck, before we get to any of that, I just heard that Sting is the halftime entertainer at the NBA All-Star Game. Does that make any sense? It doesn't to me.
No, it doesn't at all. That doesn't feel like that matches the fan base.
Beyonce's at the Super Bowl. Beyonce's at the Super Bowl.
I'm not a big fan of the NBA this year, but okay. Whatever.
I'm with you. It's very odd. Speaking of very odd, the entire campaign is very odd. Are you in Des Moines yet?
I am actually just staring at the beautiful Capitol Dome they have here right now.
We will join you there on Sunday. We'll do the show there Monday and Tuesday morning. Ro Khan will be there Monday afternoon. So we got it covered, and Chuck's got it covered, of course. What can you tell us about Meet the Press on Sunday?
Well, we're going to be live here. I got at least two of the top three Republicans going at this point, all set. I think we've agreed to wait a few hours. You always get me right before I'm allowed to totally go.
No, listen, I get it. I just figured if there's a chance to promote it, there's your chance.
Oh, yeah. No. But it, two of the top three Republicans, I'll let you guess which of the two, and likely at least one, if not both, Democrats, so we'll see.
Neither one are Dan Quayle.
Neither are Dan Quayle. Okay. That is correct.
All right. That
is somebody that will not be on the show.
All right. So here's the big news in case anyone missed it. Trump's not going somewhere. Trump is such a big deal now. When he doesn't go somewhere, it's news. Chuck, I maintain that Donald Trump is, and Dave Ennett here brought up the best analogy I've heard in a long time. The simple solution to this is Donald Trump is our Kim Jong-un. He's a privileged, spoiled little brat who says whatever he says when he says it. And the consequences don't seem to matter.
You say consequences don't seem to matter. What consequences? he is yet to pay for things that any other candidate would have paid dearly for, whether it's things he said, people he's offended, stuff he hasn't done. I mean, look at the way he just campaigns in Iowa. Had any other person campaigned in the state and basically refused to spend the night in the state? You know, most of the time, I mean, I think with a rare exception, and I cannot think of a time he has spent the night in Iowa yet, but I got to think at least one time he has. But he'll fly in and he wants to sleep in his own bed or sleep in a Trump hotel. So he is, and there are no Trump hotels out here in Iowa. So he does things his own way, and not only has he gotten away with it, he has thrived. And on this debate thing, it's petulant. It's all the things that you say. And guess what? I don't think it's going to hurt him one bit. And if anything, he could benefit because tonight's debate will become a Cruz bash fest.
And in the midst of the Cruz bash fest with him not there, he'll probably get better numbers for his other event that he's doing, some put together in the last 12 hours event, quote, for the troops.
Can you imagine if he gets 5,000 people to show up to his event tonight? And he's able to commandeer 5,000 people across town, in the same town, mind you,
right,
as the debate. It will show you his power right now. And, look, most other candidates wouldn't have the guts to take on the mouthpiece of the Republican Party in Fox News. Donald Trump doesn't have a problem with that. I mean, it's been quite remarkable to watch in many ways. You could argue that this is what you reap what you sow. They've been sort of the party, particularly on the way they've managed debates, they've tried to choose moderators. They've tried to choose news organizations. And now they shouldn't be shocked when a candidate decides to choose a moderator, choose a news organization.
Yeah, and Fox's response to it was, Roger Ailes in particular, was, don't jump
that
into
was
the...
childish.
Yeah, it really was.
It was childish. He made it where Trump should have been the only petulant person here. And I think we found out that Roger is, he's still a once an operative, always an operative. He's not a news guy. He's an operative. And he's trying to get rid of Trump in some way, and it frustrates.
And the brilliance of Trump here is that he took direct insults on women everywhere, and specifically on Megyn Kelly, who was doing her job and frankly doing it well, and took that and made it and completely flipped it where he's the victim. David Copperfield called and said, I got to see how you do that.
It's unbelievable. And the people that thought, look, he is a force of personality. I think he's going to provide a blueprint, frankly, for other candidates in the future to realize that, don't retreat when you're having a bad news cycle. Own it and somehow deflect and attack. That's what Trump has done. Every time you think, he basically ignores criticism and just marches forward and plows forward and owns controversy and owns things. But you know what? He outlined this strategy. In fairness to him, he's outlined the way he acts in his books. Art of the Deal. I mean, he basically, he talks about sort of, phony strengths and how to sort of play an opponent like this or play somebody that you're negotiating with. I mean, so... It isn't he believes everything he wrote in that book. I guess you got to give him credit for that.
Yeah, well, listen, denial's a dangerous state, but whatever state Trump's living in, you know, it's like that old joke from Friends, what color is the sky in your world? And Trump's apparently is a bright orange, the same hue as his hair. So the debate goes on tonight, the special event goes on tonight, and unbelievably, it appears that come Monday, when we're all in Iowa, the much tighter race is going to be Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton, unless the polls are completely sideways.
How about that? How about that? Look, we're still... If Trump were any other candidate right now, okay, and he had been running a more traditional campaign, and we'd seen all these polls in the last week showing him with anywhere from a 5 to 8 point lead, we'd say this thing is over. Trump's got the momentum. But there is a little seed of doubt that we all have with Trump. Part of it is, I think, we still can't believe he's the front runner, right? Some of us who do this for a living. But part of it is he is relying on new voters to show up. And there hasn't been evidence yet that the new voters are going to come out.
No, that's a good point.
We don't have higher voter registration rolls. So we don't know. Now, all we have is his rally. And by the way, people show up to his rally. And people wait in line in very cold weather. And so if you're willing to do that, you got to assume they're willing to caucus.
Bernie Sanders is
waiting for these new folks to turn out as well. So, I mean, I think that to me is the drama of Monday night, which is, will these new people, either for Sanders or Trump, show up or won't they? And if they don't, then Cruz and Clinton are going to win.
Chuck, how many heads will explode if the nominees are Trump and Sanders? I mean, really?
It means Michael Bloomberg run. It means we have a crazy three-way race. It means it's the most bizarre presidential election in our history. And it will mean, yes, heads will explode. But I actually think it would be healthy for the two political parties. They both need to be reformed, and they almost need to blow up their establishments in order to reform them.
And the system needs a flushing.
They would do that.
Yeah. And then
it'd be good for the system.
The great border debate will then be, how many Americans do we allow into Canada? So it'll shift north quickly.
Yes.
Chuck Todd, Canadians, thanks.
They're going to be like pushing us away. That's for sure.
Thanks. We'll see you Monday in Iowa.
You got it, Steve.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye.
Chuck Todd, at Chuck Todd. Kevin, what you're just saying in my ear just a second ago that the listeners couldn't hear?
Sorry, Steve. I was saying bye to Chuck. 9 o'clock Sunday mornings.
Meet the press. 9 o'clock Sunday mornings, Meet the Press. But he'll be on with us at some point Monday morning.
Yes, likely okay. Monday. Just hammering down the time. But he'll stop by or be on the phone with us, one of the two.
Chuck Todd, you know, he's a rock star.
Literally
everybody,
a rock star?
Yeah, he plays a mean guitar. No, everybody wants a little bit of Chuck once he gets out in these events.
That's true.
So, and does a nice job with Meet the Press. Is there new TV on tonight that people will be distracted by and they won't watch any of the debate stuff? I don't know the answer to that. Mary, you're usually in charge of television, vice president of watching TV for us. Are you aware of anything that's really a must-see tonight on TV for people?
Idol. They're at Hollywood Week on Idol. So that's big. This is the fun part where they put people in groups and then they all get so upset and tired and they all start throwing up and just happens. It's bad.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
Anyway, and then
so far I'm still.
Oh, there's that new show, that Apocalypse show, starts tonight.
That's the one with Rob Lowe.
Me, You, and the Apocalypse. Yeah, I think that's on at 7
o'clock
tonight.
It's an apocalypse comedy.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a drama comedy type of weird thing with Jenna Fischer from The Office is in it as well, and Rob Lowe plays a priest, I believe.
I'm trying to be in the pitch meeting for that. All right, here's what we got. It's the end of the world, and it's hilarious.
And Rob Lowe is there.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, he's doing the Grindr thing now, too, so he's very busy.
He is very busy.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, is a typical Hollywood ripoff of sorts, even though I like both of those folks, Rob Lowe and Jenna Fischer. How can you not like Jenna Fischer?
Oh, she's great.
She's everybody's best friend. This is a ripoff of, was it a Fox show, Kevin, about the last man in the world with Will Ford?
That's on Fox. Last Man on Earth, great show.
And that's
is
another
that still on?
Apocalypse thing.
Yeah, they have been two seasons so far.
Okay, I think it's in break though, isn't it?
Yeah, probably so.
So now, to watch the end of the world, we have to watch the Apocalypse.
I guess I'm going to be live tweeting the debate. I guess I will be live tweeting the debate. Now, I don't know how I live tweet the debate and live tweet Trump's nonsense as well.
Just don't show up for Twitter.
You want to know? Maybe I'll do that. I won't show up for Twitter. I'm going to go. I'm doing an alternate event on Friendster tonight.
You know, this is an actual quote from someone. They were talking about you live tweeting the debates, mm-hmm. and I'll leave out a word, but it was Cochran live tweeting the debates is the fill in the blank the best.
That's sweet.
It was very sweet.
The absolute sweet. Best?
Yeah, sweet. Something along those lines.
That was mom.
Right.
That was my mom. Yeah, that was my mom. As we go through the morning, we're going to bring up occasionally this sad anniversary of the 30th anniversary of the Challenger disaster. But it got me thinking about Krista McAuliffe's kids, because I don't know if people remember she had a son and a daughter. The New Hampshire school teacher's daughter was, I believe, 6 years old, and her son was about 9 or 10 when she died. And her husband, years later, was remarried. At last I knew, he became a federal judge. The son is now, he's getting, so he'd be what, mid-30s?
30-ish. Yeah.
He's almost 40 now.
His age right now.
And the daughter would be in her mid-30s. And I don't know if they ever got married or had kids of their own, but the daughter I know became a teacher, like her mom.
Now, her son, Scott, is going to be speaking at a memorial today with a lot of the other family members, and he does not make appearances. So this is the first appearance that he's made in many, many, many years.
The family remained, you know, very private through all those years. And the little town of New Hampshire, was it Concord? Where are they from? Well, they're all little towns in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm. Concord. That's where he's a judge now.
Did a nice job of, you know, protecting them and supporting them. Stephen McAuliffe, the husband, became a federal judge. Still a judge?
Yeah, he's still a judge in New Hampshire, and he still declines interviews. He still will not talk about Krista or the incident.
In a way, this is maybe it sound like a weird thing to say, but in a way, it's so much better that it happened then instead of now in the Twitter world, because they wouldn't have been allowed to remain private.
Yeah.
There was a little bit more of a sense of honor then, I think, in honoring people during a time of tragedy. But that's interesting, as you said, that the son will speak today, because in 30 years, could you tell me any time you've seen him in public?
No. In fact, they said that's why it's especially noteworthy, because he does not speak. The whole family, as you said, Steve, they don't talk about it. It's kind of nice today. What they're doing is they're going to be dedicating a Challenger Learning Center, basically like a little museum for kids that focuses on science and engineering and math and lots of technology.
And the son, I just saw a note on this, the son got into marine resource management. I don't know if that's what he still does, but you know, they have their own lives. And it's interesting because I can't even find in the vast, wide, wide world of the Internet, I've not ever seen anything about whether or not they have their own kids now.
Now, how about the Scobie, Dick Scobie?
Uh-huh.
His son is a major general in the Air Force now. Yeah. So they've all gone on to do great things.
The Remembering the Challenger, 30 years ago today. All right, it is 6:57. We're back after this with the 7 o'clock hour and a lot of politics to discuss and some shouting after this on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Tom Brady and Eric Edelstein are here, and Eric works for a company that he started. Well, it started out as an Amway distributorship, but then he got into politics. And what do you guys do?
We do electoral campaigns and public affairs across country.
And Pat, your company is?
Next Generation Strategies.
And you do a similar thing?
Lobbying and media relations.
Okay. Matt Strawn is standing by on the phone. Matt is the former chair of the Iowa Republican Party. And we like Matt, and we encourage you to follow him on social media, at Matt Strawn, Strawn. How's the circus? And I shouldn't even say that because Showtime will sue me, because that's what they're calling their campaign special.
Well, guys, I don't know if you can feel caucus fever all the way over there on the lakeshore, but it is real. It is, you know, Donald Trump is getting exactly what he wanted. We're talking about him, and we're going to be talking about him tomorrow. So it's fascinating time here. It's like nothing I've ever seen in all my years of Iowa politics, and I think that follows what we heard from Chuck Todd earlier this morning.
We're going to be joining you. We're looking forward to this, joining you on Monday and Tuesday from Des Moines, and Ro Khan will be there Monday afternoon, Monday and Tuesday morning, so I hope you can join us then, too. But we were talking about something off the air a second ago. Would anyone in Iowa with any knowledge of how the process works have guessed that you could win, presuming that and assuming that Trump wins, by never sleeping in Iowa, with the exception of one Holiday Inn night a couple of nights ago, by not going and shaking hands with farmers, by not getting some farm stuff on your boots, by not going around and doing the retail thing? He hasn't done any of it.
No, he's completely remade the, yeah, if his folks do turn out on February 1st, he has kind of remade the caucus map. Now, so far, I think that's a Trump-specific phenomenon. You know, there's no evidence that, you know, that's a path that others could take. But I think a lot of that is due to the people that are attracted to Trump aren't the traditional party activists who have that expectation of not just meeting, but sitting down with the candidate they're ultimately going to support. So in a strange way, the people that are, you know, supporting Trump and turning out to these rallies don't know that they're supposed to be, you know, candidates are supposed to be in front of them on bended knee. So it's been absolutely fascinating and upended everything that we thought we knew about caucus politics.
Hey, Matt's Pat, sorry about that Rose Bowl loss, but what are the...
Why you got to start?
I had to take that shot at him. He's a friend of mine. Hey, what are the numbers, though? And we were talking earlier a couple weeks ago that Trump's going to have to put on the board to win, or the numbers that are going to have to show up for him to do what has to be done to win.
In regards
to
turnout for the caucus?
Yeah, turnout, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And first, I couldn't quite hear you, Pat. I thought you said 7-0 first in the Big Ten Iowa basketball. Before we...
I knew this was going to stay. Vicious, just vicious.
You know, this is, you know, what you need to watch, turnout, and of course it's cliche, but in the caucuses even more so, because, you know, we're not talking about, you know, just going into a primary where you can take off over your lunch hour and throw in a vote, but it's going to require 60 to 90 minutes of your time, and for these Trump people that have never participated in the process, to show up. And if we have anything that looks like a traditional caucus turnout, about 120 to 130,000, I still think Cruz has the slight edge. But the closer that number climbs to 145, 150,000, and those new caucus goers that Trump is turning out, then I think, dare I say, it's going to be a huge night for Donald Trump on February 1st. And what is fascinating here is you can register as a Republican on caucus night. And the Trump events around the state, when they have their pregame speakers, it's not local politicians throwing out red meat like you're used to seeing at rallies, but it's his staff on stage explaining just how easy it is to register caucus night, and then literally says, if you can spell T-R-U-M-P on a blank slip of paper, you have caucused.
And the, that and they, be and high they, bar and they, for and some of those.
That
folks.
Is a high bar.
for some of the
capital
Trump
T.
Bars. So, Matt, here's the thing that's remarkable to me is that there are still people talking about a conspiracy theory that you will have because of that ability to register caucus night. Lines and lines of troublemaking Democrats who are going to come in to try to make sure Trump wins, because the feeling is Hillary would be able to beat Trump in a one-on-one, whereas maybe some of the other candidates in a general campaign could make things a little more interesting. I mean, you know, and by the way, I don't buy it, because I don't buy anything anymore, because I clearly know nothing.
Well, listen, if we've learned anything over the last 12 months of the Donald Trump experience, none of us have any idea what's actually going to happen. But every caucus cycle, there's some theory like that, where there's infiltration of the caucuses, and it's incredibly rare, especially when you have, you know, Democrats and liberals and, well, actually socialists, literally, feeling the burn on the Democrat side. You know, there's so much energy and activity with the Democratic caucuses going on simultaneously. I think that will be fairly low. And, you know, one thing right now, and I think you may have talked about in a previous segment, you know, there's still no real evidence of this surge in voter registration that some people are pointing to and saying, well, see, maybe this Trump thing isn't real. But they are training their people to actually do that caucus night. So it is almost impossible to divine any clues other than anecdotal evidence right now. But it just feels, in talking to legislators at the Capitol, you know, who just got back from their districts, it just feels like there's a Trump surge building.
Hey, Matt, what, and I know it's different because it's a caucus, what time will we know something? I mean, we don't get, you know, rolling results like you do in a traditional race.
Yeah, so 1,681 precincts across the state will all start at 7 o'clock Central on Monday night. Some procedural matters. Everybody gets to speak on behalf of their candidate. So the voting usually starts about 45 minutes to an hour in, pretty much real-time reporting with the new app that the party is using. So you'll start to see those returns come in probably about 8:30, between 8:30 and 9 o'clock is when you'll see the first returns come in. And all we do, just so people who are following can understand the caucus process on the Republican side, it's just straight aggregate vote. So we tally every vote from those 1,681 precincts, and that's your caucus result.
You can announce it. Pretty comfortable in saying you could announce a winner by 10 o'clock?
Well, as the guy who presided over it 4 years ago when we had...
hey, thank you very much. You saved the union.
A little PTSD for me.
Every time somebody asks Matt that, he flinches.
Right, exactly. I'm actually hiding under my desk now.
last word, Eric.
Hey, Matt, is there an analog to Obama in 08 where nobody predicted the kind of turnout that... I mean, Hillary ultimately reached her stated caucus goal and yet got blown out of the water because you had that sort of unexpected turnout. Is that an analog here on the Republican side?
Yeah, and I think if we wake up in the morning and Donald Trump had a huge night, that's exactly what happened to Ted Cruz. I suspect Ted Cruz will hit their vote goal in anything that looks like a traditional caucus model. But the unknown is, you know, those 20,000 to 40,000 new people, do they show up? And if they show up, odds are they're voting for Donald Trump.
T-R-U-M-P. Practice. Matt, thank you. We'll see you in Iowa.
Yeah, we'll see you over here in a couple days, guys.
Excellent. Matt Strawn, good guy. At Matt Strawn, he's a former Iowa Republican chair. We'll get traffic from Mary now. On 720 WGN, Rick Pearson will join us. Talk about the state of the state yesterday and whether Cullerton and Rauner have a deal of sorts moving forward. Before that, here's Mary.
Some have said local control is impossible, and yet many in this chamber have embraced it before, voting repeatedly to give Chicago more control in its contracting and collective bargaining rules.
722. I speculated yesterday before the State of the State that the speech in Governor Rauner's head may include duct tape and throwing Mike Madigan into the lake, but that's not what came up yesterday. It was asking for help, and it was friendly gov. Did it get over Rick Pearson?
Well, Steve, I think, you know, actually, I really appreciated the blog item you wrote about your take on the state of the state. I thought it was actually very spot on. But
thanks.
It was you never sometimes know which Bruce Rauner you're going to get. And after days of name-calling leading up to the state of the state, you had the governor asking for bipartisan cooperation. In fact, some Republican noted that, hey, he didn't call Mike Madigan any names. So, you know, that shows some intent here. But the fact of the matter is he's still sticking to his pro-business, union-weakening agenda. It's an election year. Democrats want to preserve their majorities. There are signs of some cooperation on certain things, like the state's public employee pension issue. But even then, when you have the fact that it is a legislative election year, unions are big contributors to Democrats, even with cooperation between Senate President John Cullerton and Governor Bruce Rauner, I'm not sure in the end how far that really goes this year.
Is the Cullerton-Rauner survivor-like alliance real?
Oh, I think it is. And in fact, Cullerton has been, you know, backdoor looking for ways to try to find things that he and the governor can agree upon and move forward and try to break the impasse. But at the same time, you have kind of this political triangulation going on of Rauner being viewed by some Democrats as trying to, you know, spin off Cullerton and try to break an alliance with House Speaker Mike Madigan. And ultimately, any proposal in the legislature has to go through the Speaker's office.
I know that Cullerton is in Madigan have a certain loyalty that's party driven, but what's the behind the scenes story between the two of them?
Well, I mean, for a long time, John Cullerton served in the House and was a top deputy to Mike Madigan. But that having been said, when you become a top legislative leader, there's always a little bit of tension that exists between the two chambers. We've seen it time and time again. And in fact, we've seen time and time again where governors will try to use the Senate President's office as a way to kind of leverage in for their agenda. So, but nevertheless, Cullerton is still, you know, a very strong Democrat. And while in the past he's tried to advance some things that Mike Madigan wouldn't necessarily go along with, without complete agreement, nothing moves forward.
So what you learned from yesterday, and normally the State of the State's like the State of the Union. There's a lot of proposals. I'd love to do this year, but you guys got to get behind it, and on and on and on. Is there anything that broke through or cut through that's different yesterday that has legs going forward today and beyond?
Well, one major thing, and this was kind of a shift attention kind of thing by the governor, was talking about needing to change the way that the state distributes money to its public schools. And that's something that has been talked about in abstract for a while. The part of the problem is that wealthier school districts, traditionally suburban school districts, don't get a lot of state aid right now and are reluctant to give up any more than they've got right now. So for the Republican governor to support this, he is in some essence taking on a big part of his Republican caucus. That having been said, the way the governor phrased this is that we need to change the school aid formula, but make sure no district loses any money. Well, to do that, you're going to have to pump a lot of money into the public schools, and that's going to require a tax increase.
The Rauner Rahm war o' words seems to have quieted. What's happening there?
Well, I think that's just that was the nature of the speech yesterday. He didn't mention Mike Madigan. He didn't mention Rahm Emanuel, though he did say that around the Chicago area there is economic growth despite what he called the horrible mismanagement of Cook County and Chicago. So, I mean, there's still the back and forth that's going on between the two guys. But, again, as I've said before, they're businessmen, and in some respects that's their nature of how they act.
And you've heard the conspiracy theory as well that the Rauner attack on Rahm is actually a Rauner Rahm alliance, with the end game being what?
Yeah. Well, one, I don't buy the conspiracy theory.
Right.
Two, what the governor said about public schools in no way directly impacts the most immediate need for the Chicago public schools, which is that nearly $500 million and pension relief. CPS was supposed to go out for borrowing yesterday. That got pulled back. A lot of questions going on about, you know, what happened there, and is a sign that maybe the market isn't interested in buying CPS bonds.
It's Rick Pearson, host of the Sunday Spin. Of course, Chicago Tribune, ChicagoTribune.com. You know, I don't know if you know this, Senator, finest political writer in America.
Absolutely, he is.
And by the way, all of his spelling and punctuation are top-notch as well.
They are, yeah. At Rep 30.
I got a guest for Sunday?
Yes, we're going to use the second hour from 8 to 9 o'clock to set up the Iowa caucuses. I've got my friend Robin Johnson, who's a professor and political consultant out at Monmouth College. And I've got my good buddy Bob Sector, formerly of the Tribune, and now enjoying his retirement.
We will be in Des Moines on Monday and Tuesday, and I'm sure calling you regularly to go, what's going on with this?
I don't know that you'll be on the air long enough to explain how a caucus actually takes place.
Audrey did a great job of that this week. Yeah. Audrey explained the whole thing. So it turns out I'm caucusing for all the candidates on both sides. I didn't even know I could do that. It's sort of a Chicago move in Iowa. At Rab30 on social media, RAP30. It's Rick Pearson and Sunday Spin, 7 a.m. Sunday. Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
7:28, more with Eric and Pat. And later on, the caucus rockets. Mm-hmm. Who are you featuring today?
I am featuring two up-and-coming political advisors, political pundits, Eric and Pat. You might have heard of them.
Not familiar with their work. 7:29.
But actually, we're actually going to explain. People keep saying, yeah, these are great, but what does caucus even mean?
Okay. All right.
We're going to delve into that and why it's called caucus.
Well, because it's a funny word that people would remember.
Sort of.
Yeah. It's 7:29. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Our average working family is making less than they were 8 years ago. We are virtually tied for the highest property taxes in America, and we have far more layers of government and mountains of debt at every level.
Governor Rauner, State of the State yesterday, 7:40. We'll start there. I have a new blog up at WGNradio.com that you can see. But here is Eric Adelson and Pat Brady rejoining. Here are my simple suggestions. Let's see how many he actually took yesterday. People of Illinois have to become actively involved and have to say, I'm sick of this. I'm not going to take it anymore. That remains to be seen. Rauner continues to work with Cullerton on school funding and a new pension deal. The governor agrees to table any discussions of union reform. He says it publicly.
My friend Steve, all the time I've spent with you, go astray.
We're not wrong.
Okay.
Hold on.
Right.
He says, I will table all discussions of union reform until after this budget is resolved and the next one due on July 1st. Two more. The speaker will return to negotiations immediately and publicly pledged to help solve the budget crisis. I know that's the funniest one. And I mentioned Cullerton. Cullerton gets the, oh, and the governor will work towards bipartisan issues that can actually be bipartisan issues in a show of faith and trust to try to build that across the aisle so they can work towards bigger things. Now tell me where I'm wrong.
Number three, he can't concede the issues that he ran on.
He's not conceding.
Well, you're saying table it, but it's part of the budget discussions. I know others don't agree, but it is part and parcel of the budget discussions, and he can't table that. He has no negotiating leverage if he tables that, and those are the issues he ran for governor on. So he's got to keep those in the negotiations.
What I'm maintaining is, unless you find a way to say to Madigan and company, I am not going to break up your unions to the point where it sinks in and say I'm willing to revisit this with you on July 2nd after you get the next two budgets done, then you're fine. If he has no other negotiating stance, then well, I've missed the memo for an entire year.
Well, then he doesn't have.
There are other things to play with.
He doesn't. No, there really aren't. These are these are some core issues.
Okay, so we're not going anywhere.
He does. Well, no, they can. He's actually, and we saw yesterday the pension agreement and the talk about school funding. Reformation. He's come a long way as a Republican.
Oh, I agree with you. He's come a long, but
the other guys haven't gone anywhere. And actually, he's actually talking about tax increases. So this is a core issue that he talked. His whole speech yesterday was about we need more taxpayers, not more taxes. Right now, the solution is the Democrats submitted a budget $4.5 billion out of balance, and they want to fund it with a tax increase with no reforms.
I understand that. But what's the bare minimum the governor would accept in regards to union reforms in exchange for getting back to this and getting a solution?
Well, here's the problem. The Democrats backs against the wall. If you look at the money they take from the unions, 52-53% of what they get from the unions and the rest from the trial lawyers, they will not back down on anything so far. So that's why we are where we are.
No, I get but I'm not concerned about where we are, the history of any of this. I'm concerned about where we go from here. And let me get Eric in on this. Were you moved at all? Well, that's a dangerous question. Were you moved at all by the fact that the governor said yesterday, I'm working with Cullerton and I want to work with people to get this done?
I wasn't. What I did is I took the governor at his word. Look, he's a bottom line guy. He said at the top of his speech, our job is to improve the quality of life for the people of Illinois. By his own standard, a year in, he's a catastrophic failure. And look at the numbers. He's a bottom line business guy. Our debts are bigger than they ever were. Our unpaid bills are higher than they ever were. Our credit rating is worse. Our social safety net has been shredded. And yes, I know that change takes a long time, but here's my biggest problem with the governor. He is entitled to his own opinions, but he's not entitled to his own facts. And he stands up there and he attacks AFSCME with a bunch of facts that aren't true. He says we pay these public sector workers more than private sector. University of Illinois study says absolutely not true. He says Illinois pays public employees more than any other state in the country. University of Illinois study, that's not true. We're 9th or 10th in the state. He stands up there and says our neighboring states pay less in taxes than we do. It's categorically not true. You know, Illinois pays 3.75%. You look at Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Indiana. They all pay higher taxes across the board. They tax retirement income. And if you look, and again, I'm not for higher taxes, but if you really want to make comparisons, if we adopted the tax structure of every one of our neighboring states, we would plug most of our deficit hole today. So I do think it really isn't about, you know, him backing down on reform. I don't know what union reform means. This guy wants to get rid of the folks who really, you know, protect our communities and take care of our seniors and work every day. I do agree there are changes and blame to go around, but he stands up there and he makes up his own facts. And by his own standard, we are worse off than we were when he took office.
All right, we got to get to the primary stuff. Pat, answer to that.
Well, I mean, obviously, I disagree, and anybody that understands how the state of Illinois works understands that the pensions that the public sector folks are getting are way too expensive for what this state can afford, and this is a product of a lot of mistakes by both Democrats and Republicans, and something needs to change.
This is where I think we run into the wall over and over and over again. We've got to take – nothing in the past matters. You can't change a second of the past. So there's not a thing that leads up to today that matters. Wait, the thing. So what are you going to do starting today that's going to change where we are? Both sides.
Well, you saw it yesterday and that there has been movement on this pension bill that Rick talked about. Funny, they should say that it might not make it through a primary election, but this is a bill that the union supported when it was submitted by the Senate president. But now that Governor Rauner says, hey, you know what, this may not be a bad idea, they're saying they don't support it. So there's political hypocrisy to go around. But that's the movement on school funding, the movement on talking about tax increases if you get reform. So there has been a lot of movement.
You know, it's a problem when newspaper columnists start saying Blagojevich might have been a better governor than Rauner.
Steinberg, is that a real columnist?
Well, I'm just saying, it's a columnist who writes a column.
He's
every
an
day.
Angry
but,
man.
But here, the thing on the pension reform, and I agree with you. You know that, Pat. If they can sit down and come to a deal, that's great. But he sort of acts like it's amateur hour. He stands up at a press conference and then says all this stuff was agreed to that Cullerton never agreed to. And he talks about we're going to reform this, but this is our – we've declared victory over the unions now. And it's sort of a kick in the teeth to anybody who wants to work with him. And it's not good faith.
He cannot continue to call people names. He can't continue to go after Tom Dart when Tom Dart brings up something that's a completely legitimate point. He's got to get rid of all of that. If yesterday was the start of that, that's great. But Madigan can't not do the job. He can't not show up for meetings. He can't show up for a nice, safe press conference afterwards.
Listen to that speech, and this is indicative, I think, of how disengaged he's been. He couldn't properly pronounce Rauner's chief of staff last name.
Mike Madigan?
Yeah, Madigan couldn't. But that's like either completely arrogant or I'm not involved.
Well, they probably haven't met. It's 7:47. Let's get to the traffic, and Mary's here with that, and then we'll come back and talk about what we're doing in Iowa. And, Andre, you're going to have these two on as guests later on in the caucus raucous.
The caucus raucous, yep. It'll All be right. a fun one.
Mary, what do you got? Stevie Wonder, 751. Steve Cochran Show continues. Eric Adelson's here. And, Eric, how do people follow you on social media?
Adel64.
A-D-E-L 6-4. And Pat?
Pat_Brady.
All right, so let's talk about the primary. We're going to be in Iowa Monday and Tuesday morning, Roe on Monday afternoon. The Democrat thing just fascinates me because you brought this up earlier when we were talking with Matt Strawn. Does this feel to you like a repeat of 2008?
Boy, I tell you, if I'm sitting in Hillary Clinton's shoes, it sure, as Yogi Berra would say, feels like deja vu all over again. I think the difference is... As much as there's been a bit of a Sanders surge here, he still has not shown the ability to cross over when you get into these bigger states to a diverse audience. Now, that could change if he sweeps these first two primaries. And then I think you look at South Carolina kind of having to be a firewall for Hillary Clinton.
But they go to Nevada first, don't they?
Well, they do. It's a caucus in Nevada.
Right.
Correct. And then you have, I think 8 days later, you have the South Carolina primary.
So it could be an 0-3.
Well, if it's 0-4, I think then she's in deep, deep trouble. But I think she can lose Iowa and New Hampshire. I think it's a long primary process, but I think she can survive. That's not an ideal situation. So I think one of the things to look at, and Pat and I were just talking about this, conventional wisdom is always wrong, and that's what the beauty when the voters get involved. One thing for people who are really into this to pay attention to is Saturday night, the Des Moines Register will come out with their final pre-caucus poll. And as much as I've derided polling as being flawed and the paradigm being broken, the polling outfit that does the Des Moines Register poll, they do a much deeper dive and they have a good pulse to the caucus goers. They're the ones that predicted Obama would win. I think they predicted Santorum would win. So I think if you want to look for signals before Monday, those who can't get enough, Saturday night will be a sort of the biggest inflection point before Monday.
And is Bernie Sanders popular to this level because of some magical words he said and some incredible idea that no one else has had before?
No, or Chairman Mao had the same idea. same ideology.
Different outfit. Different outfit, different haircut. Or is Hillary so unpopular anybody could have filled Bernie Sanders' shoes?
Well, I think that's a little unfair on Hillary.
I'm asking.
I think it's what you said, the perfect storm on Trump is not dissimilar on Sanders. We have an anti-Washington, anti-establishment.
Anti-media
electorate. We have sort of the frumpy, grumpy anti-politician guy. I mean, he's sort of the opposite of Trump. He's also the opposite of a blow-dried, soundbite politician, a guy from the Bronx.
He's like your crazy grandfather that you only see twice a year, but you get a hoot out of him. Right. You just go, oh, it's cool. Plus, he gives me money.
Yeah, it seems like that's the young appeal because the college kids go crazy.
Well, it's the anti-cool is cool to the millennials,
Yeah,
and it's a little bit of that, I think. And so And look, he is saying some things that get people's heads nodding in the same way that Trump has. He has struck a nerve. And I think, you know, how far it goes, we'll see. But look, nobody...
But it's all turnout-based, right? It's still all turnout-based.
It's turnout-based, but it becomes... Look, at the high... Let's also put this in perspective. At the highest record turnout Iowa caucus ever, that's only 16% of registered voters in Iowa. In Iowa. 16%.
I had no idea. 16% is the high.
We're so focused on a fraction of a fraction of a homogenous state that really doesn't represent the rest of the country, but they're first to go, and so it has outsized
importance. Well, let me flip it then. If Hillary wins, is Bernie done?
I don't think he's done, but I think that's a huge, huge win for Hillary if she pulls out Iowa. If she doesn't, I just that plane ride from Des Moines to Manchester, boy, that's a long flight if you're Hillary Clinton looking back 8 years ago and having gone through a similar thing. But I think she can survive it.
Michael Bloomberg can jump in at any time, and he said he wouldn't run against Hillary. He would run if Bernie Sanders looked like he was headed for the nomination, and Bloomberg can do that as late as he wants. But are you ever going to hear a draft Biden movement?
I think you'll see some of that. The problem is, you know, there are ballot access rules, as Pat knows.
And there's sore loser rules for Trump going third party.
Well, for Trump
right?
doing through that. But I'm saying for a guy like Biden, there's a point at which you can't get on the ballot in primary states
he
to win delegates.
He wouldn't be on the ballot here,
There's another factor.
Could
which
you do
I
it at the convention, though? Could they do it at the convention?
Sure, if after a certain number of ballots you free up the delegates. You know, there's another point here, which is under the arcane delegate rules, I don't know the Republican side. I know the Democratic side. There's a whole bunch of superdelegates already pledged. There's a whole bunch of people who, when they vote the first time, have to vote for Hillary Clinton.
So you can't release a superdelegate?
Not until, I think, after a first ballot. But my point is, there hasn't even been a vote cast. He already has a 10 to 15% deficit in delegates to Hillary Clinton. So that's a lot to make up, even if he wins Iowa and New Hampshire.
Democrats rigged it up pretty good this time. Doing the debates Christmas Eve during the Super Bowl.
And now we're at a point where Hillary would like to do an extra debate, and Bernie's going, no, I'm done. It's just fascinating. It's fascinating to watch. All right, on the Republican side of things, just give me a little preview of what you anticipate tonight. Will it be a bash Cruz fest or a bash Trump fest or neither?
I'm hoping that everybody gets in the back of the room and says, hey, guys, it's getting late in the game here. We're going to start voting. We better start ripping this, you know, into this guy because nobody's touched him.
You're talking about Cruz?
No. Trump.
Oh, Trump. Okay.
But I suspect it's going to be a Cruz bash.
Right, because he's going to be the guy in the middle of the stage.
Yep.
I'm still not convinced Trump's not going. I'm not
He shows up about 12 seconds before kickoff.
I'm not convinced he doesn't make an entrance and go, move over, Ted.
Yeah, exactly.
My podium.
We made a side bet on this, too. I said, there's no way he's showing up. You think he will.
Well, you're the logical side because he's reserved the arena. And he, you know.
Right.
But I don't know. I just don't think Donald Trump's number one concern is the troops. I think Donald Trump's number one concern is the Trump. And why else would you believe anything other than that?
This time next week, we will know.
Yeah, it's a wacky ride. This kind of makes the whole 2000 election and the post game through January look like a day at the beach.
That was pretty weird, too.
Yeah.
I'm even kind of... Like
fast forward to next January, a statistical tie between Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
And all of America leaves at the same time.
Did Chuck Todd really say today this would be good for the system?
Yeah,
Bernie
did.
Sanders.
Yeah, but it's early.
Gosh.
You know, Chuck wasn't sleeping well, I guess. Nice to see you guys. Thank you for the help, as always.
Thank you.
7:57. We're back after this on 720 WGN.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you...
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Gene.
Yeah, Hollywood. You know I love you more than when I should. Yeah, Hollywood. Well, kiss me, kiss me good.
8:11 in the morning, and Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9. Good morning, buddy.
I believe that I am going to be broadcasting live from Presidential Towers that morning.
And
the Sunday morning show. The past several years, we've been out there, you know, greeting people as they're going up, as they're, you know, coming down, reporting who the sweatiest people are at WGN.
Will the broadcast keep you from actually doing the climb?
Yes, unfortunately. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into doing the broadcast.
So, preparation for the same?
You know, as much as I would, you know, love to be there. And most days I do that run, but that particular day, that particular climb, I'm afraid I'll be, you know, locked down at the microphone. you know, chained to the microphone.
I have great news for you, Dean, because we were able to work it out that we have some of the sports staff members who agreed to sit in for you just long enough, half hour. No, they said they'd be happy to do
but
it.
We
really,
can't
it's
have,
no trouble.
But think of inconveniencing somebody else, you know, for while I'm trying to do the show.
Right, and of course, Dean wears designer clothing that he can't sweat in, so we can't. Can't do that.
What, just disintegrate or something?
I don't know. Just trying to help my friend out.
You know, when we did a fitness challenge at a health club several years ago on the morning show.
I remember that.
I foolishly participated in.
Uh-huh.
Although I did lose 25 pounds, so I guess it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But the people at that gym, these are people who see sweaty people 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, told me that they have never seen anyone sweatier than I am.
Well, isn't that sweet?
I'm slightly honored.
Isn't that the nicest thing?
Take the honors where I can.
You get the really most nice out of your workout, Dean.
Hey, speaking of live shows, as Dean was, and this seems to be a good segment for plugs, tomorrow we're going to be at Egg Harbor Cafe in Naperville for the Allstate Hometown Voices Tour. Are you coming out for that, Dean?
I will actually be in Los Angeles, California tomorrow.
Boy, you go a long way to avoid doing the show. What are you doing in L.A.?
I would much rather be with you in Naperville.
Yeah, because you're going to be talking to knuckleheads?
I am going to be talking to some knuckleheads this weekend. I'm also going to be talking with George Clooney this weekend. So
it's going to feel like talking to me.
Not too knuckleheady. That's why I'm thinking that it's going to be very much like being in a conversation with you. Not only Clooney and Channing Tatum, both.
Yeah, very similar. Yeah. It's like a younger Cochran and a real-time Cochran, yeah. Channing Tatum and
like
Clooney.
Like a Cochran-palooza.
Yeah, it really is.
Is what I'm doing this weekend.
All right, coming up, Dean will explain several things, including a new Disney exhibit, what Michael Jackson thinks about a white guy playing him, even though he's dead, what Tyra Banks' newest time-consuming activity will be, and some Chicago concert news as well. That's all coming up. So stand by for all of that. Before we get to traffic, though, and then we'll come back and more with Dean, I want to remind you that Monday and Tuesday we'll be live in Iowa, RoCon Monday afternoon, and every significant guest will come by and do the show. We'll give you a preview of the caucuses on Monday morning, and then on Tuesday morning, a review of what we know and probably a lot of things we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got a legitimate two-party mystery here that will be happening.
And you can hear about all our experiences at the caucuses.
Very true. Very, very true. One late-breaking Trump tidbit. Donald Trump tweeted yesterday, it was childishly written, taunting PR statement by Fox that made me not do the debate, more so than lightweight reporter Megyn Kelly. I want you to remember childish when I tell you. Megyn Kelly did a GQ photo shoot, 4 or 5 years ago. She's a beautiful woman, and this was a sexy photo shoot. Donald Trump retweeted, "This is the bimbo that's asking presidential questions." Yeah, he loves women. He's great for women in America. Hello, Iowa, you listening? That's the guy that's leading in the polls. 8:15, back with your traffic right now, as a matter of fact. And Mary has that on 720 WGN. Team Richard, sponsored by the Captain James A. Lovell Federal Health Care Center. This is awkward for me, Dean, as you know, because Tyra Banks and I, of course, had a long relationship. But it turns out she's decided to go ahead and have children.
That would explain the Coldplay music, then.
We'll get to that. I don't want to overly delve into Coldplay until I have to.
That's a tease, everybody.
Yeah, Coldplay coming up. Coldplay did not impregnate Tyra Banks. Now back to Dean.
Apparently nobody impregnated Tyra Banks, but she is a new mom. She and her boyfriend just had a son via surrogate, a little baby boy by the name of York. She is 42. She's been very open about her fertility problems and desire to have a family. Yesterday it all came true, and she said as happy as she is, she wishes that other people with a similar struggle also get their dream come true as well. Thank the mother, the surrogate, who brought the child to term.
Is she involved in a relationship right now?
She is. She is. I forget the guy's name, but, yeah, she's been involved with this gentleman for quite some time now, actually.
And is he in the business?
I don't know his profession.
keeping it quiet so I don't have any trouble with
it? I'll get his income tax forms. We'll get the full dossier on him for you.
You revealed yesterday that Joseph Fiennes, who is a white British actor, was, of course, picked to play Michael Jackson in a TV movie or actual movie?
That's only because Conan O'Brien wasn't available for the job. That's only because Jim Gaffigan wasn't available.
Gaffigan is the perfect Michael Jackson.
The whitest, probably sort of translucent people that I can think of. To play Michael Jackson, Joseph Fiennes gets the role. This movie is about an urban legend that's been going around.
TV movie or theater movie?
TV movie.
TV movie.
About this urban legend that alleges that Michael Jackson, Marlon Brando, and Elizabeth Taylor all got in a car on September 11th, 2001, to escape New York after the terrorist attacks. They're going on a road trip to get out of New York. And apparently stop at quite a few Burger Kings along the way at the insistence of Marlon Brando. That's what I've heard of the plot of this whole thing.
And it's supposed to be funny.
That's allegedly.
Is Joseph Fiennes funny?
Joseph Fiennes can be funny. Okay. He can be funny, but this whole thing, the controversy is that Joseph Fiennes, in the midst of all this Oscar controversy about diversity in Hollywood. And, not only the nomination process, but African-American actors and actresses, not getting certain roles or being relegated to only certain kinds of roles, that a white actor gets chosen to play an African-American man. Joseph Fiennes says he doesn't understand what the controversy was because Michael Jackson had a skin condition in which his skin was lightening anyway.
Oh, stop it. He doesn't understand
He fails to miss. Oh, he fails please. To get the point that why, if you're an African-American actor, trying to get a job in Hollywood, you can't because a British white guy is getting the job playing Michael Jackson.
I got to tell you, it's been a bad couple of weeks for my people. As you know, as a black entertainer, I'm behind all of these causes.
Right on, my brother.
The Academy Awards thing. Earlier this morning, Dave announced that Sting will be playing halftime at the NBA All-Star Game. That's right, Sting. This reminded one of our texters of Elton John playing the Harley Davidson convention. A few years ago. So we got the Academy Awards thing, we got Sting at the NBA All-Star Game, and we got a white guy playing Michael Jackson.
So just, to put a cherry on top of this whole thing, somebody went back and remembered an old Oprah Winfrey interview from 1999 in which Oprah asked Michael Jackson about the rumors that he had chosen a white child to play him in a Pepsi commercial. And Michael Jackson said, "That's absolutely ridiculous. It's crazy. Why would I pick a white person to play me in anything?" He said, I'm a black American. I'm proud to be a black American. I identify as being a black American. So I'm guessing Michael might not be so pleased with this casting choice either.
All right. So we talked about Tyra Banks.
I'm just trying to stir things up, Steve.
I'll save
you all the trouble of sending the emails right now. I'm just trying to stir up trouble.
You can forward all of those, of course, to Rokan at WJNradio.com. Disneyland's doing a new... Andre, you're going to be excited about this. They're doing a new Star Wars Land exhibit at Disneyland in Anaheim.
Yeah, they've closed off Anaheim and Orlando there. They've decided to do both places.
Okay.
Isn't Han Solo supposed to dedicate it?
Han Solo is supposed to dedicate it, but he's also going to be giving... We really don't know very much about this new Star Wars Land. We know it's 14 acres. We know that there's going to be a recreation of the Millennium Falcon. We know that you will be able to get into an interactive exhibit in which opposing sides are in battle, a la Star Wars in this. But that's all that we really know about it. But Harrison Ford, Han Solo, is going to give a special preview of it on the 60th anniversary of a wonderful World of Disney. It's celebrating the 60th anniversary of the park in Anaheim. Han Solo will be releasing more information about all of this, and I couldn't be more excited. It's like toward the end of February.
Me too, Dean.
At the top of the segment, we played Coldplay music because...
I remember that.
That's Dean's jam.
theme song.
Coldplay coming to town?
Yeah, they're going to be right hot off of the Super Bowl halftime show that they're going to be doing. But just announced this morning, as a matter of fact, that they're going to be coming to Soldier Field. It's going to be July 23rd. Tickets are going to go on sale 1 week from Friday. This is their first tour in 4 years. And, Steve, I know you're a huge Iggy Pop fan just because you like saying Iggy Pop.
I just like him shirtless. Remember when Iggy Pop did that album cover shirtless and he looked like a guy that just had extensive medical testing?
Needed a sandwich.
Yeah.
Medical testing and desperately needed a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to be doing only 13 live shows this spring. One of them will be at the Chicago Theater. That's going to be April the 6th. Tickets for that will go on sale this coming Saturday morning through LiveNation.com. Yes, save yourselves the trouble with the emails again. Steve and I will both be there shirtless as well.
No doubt about it.
No. Oh,
you kidding me? All right, well, fine job by you. And again, the big news, of course, is that earlier today, and we were all shocked by this, our weather genius, Tim McGill, was announced to be the father of Tyra Banks' baby. I think that was the lead.
Correct.
Are you okay? You and he okay?
Yeah, we're all right.
Okay.
I'll keep him on the show.
He wields a mean cumulonimbus cloud, if you know what I mean.
That's what they named the baby, cumulo.
I don't even know what that means.
So, all right,
enjoy Naperville.
Yeah, you have a good trip to L.A., and then we'll be in Iowa.
Enjoy Iowa, and I'll send your best to George Clooney and Channing Tatum.
By the way, so you're not on with us in the morning?
I will not be available tomorrow, nor Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday.
Okay, so Andrea is going to be covering the show business.
All right.
All right, stand by for all of that. One Greek to another. The Greek handoff just happened.
I'll try and fill those shoes, Dean.
It's our monopoly. First the restaurants, then the entertainment world.
They pass a plate of flaming cheese from one to the other. That's how you know the torch has been passed.
You can only see if you wear the special sunglasses, too.
I understand. Believe me. I totally do. Thank you, Dean. 827. We're back after this on 720 WGN. Well, the celebration music, right? I mean, that's totally appropriate as we go to the phone for a special announcement. Then we have a special guest in studio, too. But joining us on the phone, the boss of the Chicago Blackhawks, John McDonough. Hello, my friend.
Good morning, Steve Cochran. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thank you for doing this. Before we get to the news of this, where will you spend the All-Star break?
You know, probably going to be around here, maybe like you, spending some time with my granddaughter, and then we get back. I'm going to the All-Star game. We leave tomorrow, so that'll be eventful.
Well, that's great.
Get it next week.
That's great, and obviously we're looking forward to the boys coming home. They'll be on the road next week, and then the following week there's three big games, including Dallas right in the middle of that. So you can go to ChicagoBlackhawks.com for all that information. What is it you would like to share with us?
Steve, our wonderful partnership is going to extend through the 22-23-24 season. It's a five-year extension. I'm not sure there will even be radio in 2020.
Oh, yes, there will, John. Oh, yes, there will. We're not sure there'll be hockey.
Oh! This isn't how we practice.
But if there is, it will probably be going to other planets, if Jimmy has anything to do with it.
Yes, he is. He's working on the Jupiter-Venus deal right now.
No, that's Larry. Sputnik
and,
in space.
We're really excited about it. You know, we talk about the importance every day of wrapping up our core, whether it's the players or whether it's the coaches or whether it's the front office. And we feel this is important to get this done for a long time because it's been a great relationship for everybody. And you find out with your best relationships, you can have a lot of fun at the same time.
Which we have obviously done. How about a round of applause for five more years?
Woo!
Fantastic. On top of the current Chicago Blackhawks deal. Let me formally introduce the president and general manager, Jimmy DeCastro. Say hi to John.
Hey, John. Thank you. How are you?
I'm fine.
I got a couple of things I wanted to share this morning. First, we definitely want to throw a thank you to Rocky for everything that he's done associated with our station.
Yep.
Most importantly, in hiring you, I know for a guy who always passes the credit, you have to listen to me for two things. First, I always think about when I do things here at the station, what would my pal John McDonough do? Mm-hmm. And I always think about how you honor the past, and we do that particularly as I look at guys like Steve Cochran here in the morning. We always build for a better today, and we build for tomorrow as well, and we love following that mantra. I'm surrounded today with Jackie Paulus and Jeff Hill, the morning show, Todd Manley, the entire radio station dressed in Hawks regalia. So Jay will be very happy that we're spending money. But I definitely want to tell you thank you personally. You always pass the credit. We know Jay Blunk does all the work anyway, just like Steve and Todd do here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure.
That part's wrong, by the way.
But I do want to add one other just interesting thing, because we met a long, long, long time ago. You were just a pup at the Cubs, and I marvel at what it's like to work with your entire organization. How easy it would be to work with the Cubs today, but without you there, it's just not the same. And I'm not saying that to be disparaging of the Cubs at all, but just to watch what you've done and how you've built your company, and to be able to be great friends and build such a great business relationship is truly an honor, and we're thrilled to be associated with you.
Well, thanks, Jim.
You're both getting a sitting ovation.
You know, that's flattering. Steve, to your audience, Jimmy and I have known each other for about 35 plus years.
And, how about that?
And, you know, Larry Wirt, with your sister station, we have a long term agreement in place with WGN-TV. And for me, I started with the Cubs, Jimmy just referenced, in 1983. So this would be, at the end of this relationship, it would be 40 years for me. I'm like the Marlene Wells of the Black Cubs.
Yeah, right. We were sixth grade, though. Come on, John.
Here's the thing.
Inside joke.
Here's the thing that I think is really important, not just to us, but to the Blackhawks as well. And Jimmy gets this, and John gets this, and Dave was in his 40s when he started covering the Hawks. But here's the thing. There's two great brands that mean so much to this city, and it meant so much for the Blackhawks to be rebuilt with John McDonough at the helm to this incredible level of success, and it's meant so much for us to be rebuilt again with Jimmy DiCastro and Todd running the show. I think it's a great mix of two Chicago legends.
Well, thank you. And obviously the people at WGN Radio have come to find out, what I've known for a long time, is the brilliance of Jimmy DiCastro has taken over, and it's vibrant, it's alive, it's a great radio station, it's a comfortable listen, and we're proud that it's our home. You know, and at our place, I am so proud of our organization as well, Jimmy. You know, from Jay and Stan, and the incredible job Rocky has done. Joel Quinville, who's on your air all the time. It's great. We're both building for today. We're building for the future. And just want to be around in 2023, 24 to see where it is then.
God bless. Thanks a lot, John. We're thrilled. And go Hawks.
Yeah,
one goal.
And Jimmy brought this up the other day, John. You got the big three done. You got Q done. You got Stan done. You got the GN radio contract done. So it's been a productive
and
week.
And Seabrook. It's actually the big four.
Oh, I forgot about Seabrook. Yeah, he's important.
Wasn't this deal so that this ensures that Q will still be on the air with us?
That was what it was.
Week?
That was the original thing.
Well, that was the, you know, when we sat down, we said.
Or at least the mustache.
Joel is so good on WGN Radio, as good as he is as a coach, we've got to make sure we get the WGN Radio portion done.
Right.
So we got that done. And Dave, at some point, you've got to tell the Go-Cat story at another time. You've got to tell the Go-Cat story as it pertained to our third Stanley Cup.
Well, you told it the morning after you
Right, but
cup.
It does need to be retold. And we're about to play a little highlight clip here, which our friend Chris Duffy did, which is great. And, John, I'm going to put you on hold so you can actually listen to it. But it is a summation of the excitement of Chicago Blackhawks broadcast here on 720 WGN. So thanks to Todd and Jimmy for letting us work here. Thanks to John for keeping the Blackhawks on WGN, and Jay and everybody over there. And, of course, thanks to Rocky. So thank you, John. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Go Hawks.
Bye, John. Woo-hoo.
How about that? Traffic and then a little something special for you Blackhawk fans from the Twisted Mind of Chris Duffy. You're going to like it. Stand by.
Championship seasons and standards. The Chicago Blackhawks and WGN Radio. A partnership of perfection.
There's a new job to do.
And the United Center is up for grabs.
It's time to do it.
Hockey, baby.
Good to be alive right about now. Woo!
The Chicago Blackhawks have set a new franchise record for consecutive wins in the regular season.
It is a commitment that our organization is going to get better every day.
It's good to be alive right about now. Woo!
personality.
You don't have a poker face. Like, I think about your kids. Your kids always knew when you were angry. I guarantee it.
I don't know. You got to keep them off balance, you know.
You know, I told your mustache. Have your mustache tell your face. You don't hide anger well.
Well, I'm getting better now in my old age.
A partnership of family.
We're in the winning business. Winning business.
We love our dad.
Hawk win! Hawk win! It's triple overtime!
But he really should relax.
Oh, man! 2 seconds left in regulation!
He gets so excited.
There's a shot. There's one for the relay.
Chill, Dad. Chill.
Hawk win!
Here are Dad, the voice of the Blackhawks, on 720 WGN.
A partnership of standards, excitement.
Wow! Oh, man, what a scene on the ice surface!
The Chicago Blackhawks and WGN Radio. A partnership of possibilities.
.52 in the morning in celebration of the Hawks' continuation. The Hawks continued on 720 WGN, brand new broadcast rights agreement that extends the Hawks through my death.
Don't say God forbid. My mother always says
You realize that this agreement goes beyond the agreements with Kane and Taves and Quenneville and Bowman?
Because we're more reliable than athletes today, even those guys. The agreement extended through 2023. I will be 62 years old. No, 2024. I'll be 62 or 63 years old. And still sexy.
I will be turning 40.
Yes, you will.
That'll be awesome.
Yes, you will.
It's going
to
come to the party.
To follow the Hawks lead, are we all getting contract extensions as well? Is that how it's
through 2023?
So anyway, Dave, John McDonough brought up the Go Cat story. And, you know, I don't want people to sit around wondering what the Go-Cat story is, Dave. So this goes back to which Stanley Cup? Was it 13?
This past year.
Oh, it was 15.
2015.
All right. So you, of course, are very tied into the Northwestern Wildcats for all the obvious reasons. The Northwestern Wildcats have a great relationship, not just with WGN, but with the Blackhawks as well. John McDonough is a big supporter of the Northwestern Wildcats, as is Jay and everybody else. So you put all those pieces together, it sort of makes sense that John McDonough used you as his lucky rabbit's foot for the Stanley Cup run. So how did this start?
Well, it started with John. He was on the air one day with us, and he said, I think it was the morning of a game, right? And he said, Dave, just give me a Go Cats. I think we need some.
We need a Go Cats to lock this up. We need a Go Cats.
Go Cats. So I said, all right, John, Go Cats. And then I think I said it a couple more times.
And they got the win.
They got the win. So I get a text from him saying, I expect a call before the next game.
And was this the Anaheim series?
No, this was the Tampa Bay series.
The Tampa Bay series.
This was the Stanley Cup final.
So you get the text that says, I expect a call. Even though you've been friends with McDonough forever, you got to think he's kidding, right?
I didn't think he was kidding.
Oh, you knew he was serious.
I thought he was serious. Okay. I called him right back. I said, you mean it, right? He said, oh, yeah. He said, we're doing everything exactly the same as we did the last game. So you got to call me tomorrow, and just give me the Go Cats. So I call him the next day.
Right,
he picks up his cell. It's the day of the game, and I said, John, Go Cats,
and they won again.
Thank you very much, and they won again. So this continued,
and I believe it went to the seventh game. Right,
I went six
or six. It the went, sixth game, the went, deciding game.
Went six. So this happened with each of the games. So it started, I think, with game four, because they were down 2-1.
Right.
So it was the last three games of the series. And that last one on that Monday, remember, it was that stormy Monday they were playing at home.
Yeah, wasn't there some deal where you had trouble reaching him or something?
Well, he was down in Tampa for game five.
Right.
And I got him. He was down there having lunch. It was a night game in Tampa, and I picked up. I think he was in a restaurant.
Gave him the Go-Cats.
Gave him the Go-Cats. Great, thanks. And then, obviously, on that Monday. Now, I'm not superstitious, but I sort of think that this had some effect, because after they won the Stanley Cup on that Monday night, When I woke up the next morning at 3 o'clock or whenever we get up, there was a text from John. You're partly responsible for this. And we had him on the air that morning.
I
he told
that.
The story. So whatever.
Did you get half a ring?
Seems like I should have gotten at least something, you know.
Maybe a pendant, possibly a tennis bracelet.
Or even a ballpoint.
Now, Mary, you and Andrea are probably much more in touch with this than we are because you both have staff psychics. do you believe that Dave should get full credit for the Stanley Cup win this year? Because I got to tell you, I do.
My initial thought would be no.
Mary, where are you on Dave Bennett getting credit?
I don't know. He's pretty good at this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Kev, where are you?
Go Cats.
That's a yes.
Yeah. And Ross?
Go Cats.
Okay. By a resounding vote, caucus style, we have decided that, Dave, the Hawks don't win without you. The Hawks don't win this last Stanley Cup without your Go-Cats.
Well, obviously, I haven't called John the last few days.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Well, he didn't ask you to call during the regular season.
Right. This is just for the playoffs.
But he's setting up a cat phone, which will be a line he can pick up specifically from you, much like the red phone at the White House. The cat phone.
I think that's a great idea.
I think it is, too.
But I do think that the Blackhawks would not have come to this agreement with WGN Radio had it not been for the success which we helped bring them.
I think so.
Don't you think?
I think so.
During the Stanley Cup final?
I don't know why I would ask Kevin this, but Kevin, do you know if we can get a Hello Kitty actual phone that we could send to John in celebration?
We absolutely can.
That would be hilarious.
They must sell those, right? A Hello Kitty phone?
I'm Googling sure right now.
They sell
eBay.
Hello Kitty chia pets.
They have Hello Kitty everything.
Yeah. All right, let's turn this over to the listeners. Where can we get a Hello Kitty phone as a gift to John McDonough?
You know what? I bet like Bed Bath & Beyond. I bet Amazon. Amazon has everything.
It looks like we can get one online for $10.
Right? Yeah, let's do it.
I'll give you my credit card.
Yeah.
It's 8:58. We're back after this. This is 720 WGN. Coming up, the caucus raucous, where Andre explains even more about the caucus process. We will be live in Iowa Monday and Tuesday. Rose there Monday afternoon. And we will give you everything you need to know about the first in the nation vote for 2016. So you have the raucous coming up here in just a few minutes.
Yeah, this is going to be a really good raucous. We had a lot of people from the staff involved with this particular caucus raucous as well.
And we're moving our entire staff to Iowa.
Yeah, and there was some news before. I don't want to
bring breaking
up right
news?
Now. Well, Anna doesn't want to ride with you.
What?
It's a whole new controversy.
This is ridiculous. See, this is, you know what? By now I ought to be used to her leaving me. Devlantis was going to ride with us to Des Moines.
Yeah.
Because we're driving.
She sent me a text and said that she made other plans. She'd rather go with Roe. But I didn't say that out loud.
It's ridiculous. All right. Well, listen, I'll have to deal with it.
Is Kevin still going alone?
Kevin is...
That he just wants to be alone.
No.
Kevin, here we go. Kevin told me that he gets car sick when he rides with other people.
That's a lie.
I am completely fine with riding with Steve, but there was talk of us, like eight of us in one car, and I said, I can't handle that.
Well, here's what happened. Eight of us in one car, and Ro drives alone.
Exactly.
In his giant Apple Chevrolet Tahoe. No, that's not going to happen.
I think Kevin just wanted some alone time with you.
No, that's not the case.
I had a friend. I drove to the Masters one year with three other girls, and my one friend said, she gets car sick, so she had to sit in the front. And it was a small car the whole way there. We found out 3 years later she doesn't get car sick.
She made it up.
She just wanted to sit in the front
seat. My friends do that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's all lies. No one gets car sick.
So we will have you and I and Kevin rolling together to Iowa.
It's okay that I'm in the car?
Oh, I thought you were driving alone.
But see...
No, I'm serious. I just had
That's
a conversation
really nice.
With...
Yesterday, I thought you and Anna were... Look, it's a whole thing.
I'm not going with any of you guys.
Jeff's riding his bike out there. Jeff's all by himself.
I'm going to walk.
Jeff is Rose's
producer. I'm walking. I'm leaving now.
No, I don't think you should.
Hello, Iowa! It's the Iowa Caucus Raucous with Andrea Dahlis.
Andrea taking extra time to make sure that we're all prepared for the trip to Des Moines for Monday and Tuesday, live in the morning and the afternoon Monday with Ro and Anna. And in addition, learning us real good.
I'm trying to school y'all.
On caucus stuff. What is the caucus raucous today?
Caucus raucous. Well, we've been doing everything you wanted to know about the Iowa caucuses, but I've had several people come up and say, these are great, but What is caucus? What is a caucus? Where did it get its name?
Caucus? Hmm.
So we are going to go into that today and explain what is really at stake for both parties.
I'm from Iowa, yeah. I'm from Iowa, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's that small place with a big heart. It's the heartland, sweet pump hard. Get a bit suck, we're gonna rage on till our day come.
I'm from Iowa, yeah.
So what is a caucus? We decided to ask a few of our nearest and dearest friends at WGN Radio.
What's a caucus?
What does caucus mean?
Oh, God.
Caucus. I'm not sure.
A bunch of people in a room talking about something. What's a caucus?
A caucus?
Did you have any idea where the origin comes from?
Something dirty.
A caucus.
Caucus. I have no idea.
Well, a caucus is literally defined as a meeting of party members within a legislative body to select leaders and determine strategy. It's always a face-to-face meeting of party members in any community or members of a legislative body for the purpose of discussing and promoting the affairs of their own party. Now, traditionally, the term caucus meant a meeting of those party members in the community, but such a nominating caucus was used in the American colonies starting in 1725 in Boston. Several clubs attended largely by ship mechanics and caulkers endorsed candidates for office before the election. Thus, those became known as caucus clubs. The method of nomination soon became the regular practice among the emerging political parties. But not surprisingly, Steve, there was some illegal politicking going on even in the 1700s.
No.
Yeah. It was entirely unregulated by law until 1866. And now there's no political problems at all.
None. No. It's smooth sailing.
Absolutely. So this year, what's at stake for both parties? Pundits say for the Democrats, it's still history in the making.
We've had a lot of progress under President Obama for 8 years. Really an historic presidency. And you have an entire party on the other side who wants to roll it all back, who says we have to undo everything this president does. So really, this is not just a continuation of the progress that we've made with an historic presidency, but it's sort of saying, are we going to go backwards to the days when we couldn't elect an African American and this country was really sort of had a certain standard and only certain people were allowed? Or is this going to continue the expansion and the progressive policies of this president? That's what's at stake.
That, of course, is our friend Eric Edelstein. Now, for the Republicans, it takes on a bit of a different twist this year.
You know, they're probably less important to the Republicans than they are to the Democrats, because historically, whatever Republican wins Iowa typically doesn't win the nomination. But this year, given all the publicity that Trump and company have generated, it's just the nation's paying attention right now. So it's important for the Republicans to pick the right person to be the nominee. So it's been a bizarre year, but Iowa's always very important.
And that's our friend and pundit, Pat Brady. So that is your caucus term for today. Tells you a little bit more about what's at stake in these caucuses as well. Did you like that first Iowa song that we played by?
Yeah, I did. Well, I liked the whole thing, and I liked the full package, including the experts at the end. And I'm just as shocked as you are that Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady disagree.
I know, right? And they, Pat Brady will be out there with us at the caucuses.
Yes, he will.
Eric Edelstein not going to be there, but in spirit, of course.
Yes, and again, the Democrats thing could be, frankly, more interesting than Republicans by the time the smoke clears.
I think it will be, especially now because they are saying. He did point out, too, we got to pay attention to the Iowa Gazette. Their polling comes out Saturday night, and that is a great indicator.
Des Moines Register.
The Des Moines Register. Yeah. The Des Moines Register, exactly.
What, that Saturday night poll?
That Saturday night poll, okay. Yeah. That was actually the one that said Santorum was going to win and Obama as well. So
Nailed it.
A decent indicator.
Nailed it.
Nothing's foolproof, but
One last political note. I will, against my will, live tweet the Republican debate tonight.
Okay. You still think Trump's going to show?
Yeah, you and I have a friendly bet here because I think he is such a publicity whore that he's going to milk this to the last minute and walk out. I think the ultimate Trump would be if he walked out and told Cruz, get away from my podium, and he walked right up to the center podium. But I think somewhere within a few hours short of tonight's opening bell, he will show up. He will show up, and it'll be some sort of, I talked to Roger Ailes, he apologized, he said, I'm sorry, Donald Trump. And then he'll walk out.
Mike dropping to leave.
Yeah. But your take makes much more sense.
I think he will not show up.
Right. Because they've rented this theater arena wherever they're going to do this alleged fundraiser
for
the troops.
Yeah. All kinds of money for veterans, he says.
918. Nice job by you. Back after this on 720 WGN. It is 9:22 in the morning. 30 years ago today, the Space Shuttle Challenger blew up about a minute after takeoff, and it changed the country fundamentally and profoundly. For a long time afterwards, the shuttle program was in flux before they could figure out the legendary O-ring debacle. And then finally, the shuttle program came back until another tragedy occurred, which I believe was in 2004.
That was 2001.
Check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, check it out. When a shuttle blew up on landing in Texas. Since then, NASA has been largely in a state of flux as well. And it's sort of sad and ironic, right? Because the last thing any of those astronauts who sacrificed their lives would want would be to have their tragedies end the space program. The space program isn't funded anymore at any level close. The shuttles went away in 2003.
Yeah, 2003.
The shuttle program isn't funded, or the space program, I should say, isn't funded at any level close to what it was for 40 years. And there's a lot more that we could do in space. So you would hope that conversation will continue because, by the way of the political climate, I just don't think we can depend on hitchhiking with Vladimir Putin's gang going forward. For those of you who have the time today, I'd recommend that you take a look at what President Reagan said on that night in 1986, 30 years ago tonight. It was scheduled to be the State of the Union address, and Reagan took time instead to talk about the great loss that we all suffered in a very brief speech. It was only about 4.5 minutes. But we talked about it earlier this morning. You know, one of the great shock waves that went through the country was because Krista McAuliffe was on board and because this was a program that schools took under their belt, and little kids and junior high kids like you and high school kids were all gathered around their TVs watching. This is a 3-channel pre-internet universe. No cell phones, no texting concerns. Everybody gathered around watching that takeoff, and it was fairly clear almost instantly what had happened.
Yeah, and you were watching it. You watched it happen and you instantly thought, are they okay? Wait, that could not have just happened.
Yeah, they had to be okay. They absolutely had to be okay. How could they not be okay? So that's worthy viewing today if you go back and take a look at the Reagan speech, to be sure. On the other side of technology in 2016, are you familiar with Google Cardboard?
Google Cardboard? No.
Google has shipped 5 million Google Cardboard virtual reality devices. Jackie Paulus from runs our promotions department here, promotions and marketing. She has one on her desk. This is virtual reality in a cardboard. Ross, come out and explain this while I don't explain it well. This is virtual reality glasses that you could wear. And I tried this in her office. You take your iPhone. So far, am I right, son?
Yes. Yes, okay. You do need a phone.
You take your iPhone and you put it into the Google Cardboard. It's literally a cardboard box with goggles on it. And you look in. You know what it looks like? Remember the old click-through viewers?
Oh, the viewfinders.
Viewfinders.
Yeah.
They look like the viewfinders. And you push a little button on top. And as you hold the button down and lift your head up, down, and sideways, whatever image is on the screen changes its perspective, right?
Yeah. Yeah, basically, you connect with an app and you're able to be in a... There's a couple different versions, but one of the ones I used was a roller coaster. But rather than just having it look like you're riding a roller coaster like on a movie, you can look left and the world is to your left. You can look behind you and the roller coaster is behind you. You can look up, down, to the right. It's a completely 360 experience, virtual reality. And then from the outside, it just looks like you're staring into a cardboard box.
And it's remarkably cheap.
Yeah.
And it's like $15, I think.
Yeah.
But it's also remarkably cheap looking.
Yeah.
Like when you pick it up, you go, oh, somebody's goofing on me. I'm just looking into a cardboard box.
Basically, yeah.
But it works.
Absolutely. And Google, you know, almost sort of like the common phrase is that Droid innovates, Apple populates. Or Google innovates, Apple populates.
Mm-hmm.
So Google was able to be like, oh, yeah, we can do virtual reality for like $10.
And they have
cardboard.
So it's a gimmick at this point, and it's cool, and it's something you can play around with. But do you have any idea what they're going to do with it?
I mean,
they're trying to make virtual reality cost effective for.
Yeah, that's everybody. Sort of like the next step in entertainment and in social media and in media itself, where eventually you're going to be able to watch a sports game from the 50-yard line of the field. and you're going to be able to do, you know, watch this show, and we'll all be holograms in front of you on your dashboard.
That's what McDonough was talking about.
Yeah.
Where do we buy it? Probably online.
I'm thinking. I would buy mine on Amazon if I wanted to buy one.
Okay. And I think I'm right about the price. I think it's about $15.
It's not bad.
For a cardboard box. But check it out if you want. It's upstairs. Listeners, because you can't get in. I'm talking to Andrea. One other tech note. Facebook blew away Wall Street yesterday with its Q4 earnings call. And I think Grzanich and company were talking about this earlier. But Mark Zuckerberg threw out a statistic, which is absolutely stunning. Every day on the planet Earth, 100 million hours of video is watched on Facebook.
Yep.
I'm sorry. I was just watching some video on Facebook.
100 million hours a day.
Oh, my gosh.
Now,
I knew it was high, but that's crazy.
Okay, but here's the thing. You break this down. If there's 1 billion Facebook users around the planet, and obviously the math doesn't correlate this directly, and there's 100 million hours watched, that means every one of you who's on Facebook today is responsible for watching 6 minutes of video.
Which, if you think about it, completely makes sense.
It does.
But we do it for work.
Research.
Yeah.
Oh, work and research. Uh-huh. Okay, well, as long as
that's
you're
right.
Both. So there's a little tech roundup of stuff happening. 9:28 back after this. With the big story coming up next on 720 WGN.
I'm so sorry, you guys, but your dad and I really need a vacation alone together.
Yeah, we haven't had time away just the two of us since your mother had her emergency appendectomy.
God, that was a great few days.
That was heaven.
Okay, so you would literally rather have surgery than vacation with your own children?
Does she stutter?
That's our friend Dr. Ken Jeong, who, by the way, just a couple days ago checked me for a hernia. I don't know if you know that.
Did you have symptoms?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. It's just kind of how he shakes hands. Yeah. But we love Ken Jeong, and he's very, very funny, and there's something clearly wrong with him. Welcome back to the show, Ken.
I lump free. That's all I have to say. You are doing great.
You know, one of the things I really respect about you is how hard you work. Because, and I guess this probably comes because it's no easy way to become a doctor. But a lot of people in show business will go, "Well, I got the show. I don't need to plug it. I don't need to promote it." You're always out there talking about it. It's great.
Oh, thanks, man. I mean, to me, it's an extension of just. I love what I'm doing, and I love doing this show. And to me, I'm really just—I don't even think about it as promotion. I'm just trying to—it's just like telling your friends, like, "Oh yeah, come watch," you know, "come watch tomorrow night." It's just a good—it's a good episode. So, if you're doing something you love and you're excited about it, it's fun, you know. So, to me, you know, I try to look at it that way and try instead of thinking it's. A job, kind of, you know, it's just a lot of fun. We're so lucky.
What's the schedule during the week? Like, what is your shoot day?
Well, as I'm talking, I'm actually going to work right now. I have someone driving me today this time, fortunately. But, you know, for me, as a actor and producer on it, it's a little bit of everything. You know, some of it involves, you know, like you said, spreading the word. And, you know, and then after, like today, we have rehearsal till about 1 or 2 o'clock, and then we basically kind of perform it like a non-dress rehearsal of the script as it is in front of the producers and some of the executives, and then after that kind of like rehearsal performance, I'll go with the executive producer and we'll get feedback from either the producers or our fellow producers or writers and the executives, saying what they liked about it, what they didn't like about it, and we make tweaks. And then we have another rehearsal tomorrow, and then we make more tweaks, and then on Monday we start filming. Monday and Tuesday we start filming.
And here's the thing.
Tuesday in front of an audience, yeah.
Here's the thing about the process that I think makes it particularly difficult, because, you know, you're doing funny here. Okay, so you got to go out, and you're doing it in front of a handful of people, men and women, bosses of the show. So you're not going to get raucous laughter or feedback from the jokes. And then you're breaking down into smaller groups and doing it as well. How does the funny not get washed out?
Oh, to your point, if they do laugh, then that's a keeper. If we get a laugh at run-through, like you said, the laugh, I like it when the laughs are stingy at run-through, and I want it to be that way because you want it to go – you know, sometimes the live audience that we have, what if they're low energy and what if they're not going to laugh much? That never happens on our show. But, you know, when I did stand-up comedy, you know, you want to have tough crowds because it's the only way you can get better. You cannot get better with an easy crowd because you're just going to settle. That's human nature. So for me and for the writers, you know, as a writer, and I'm one of the, I often in the writer's room myself, after rehearsals and notes, I actually go to the writer's room and then, you know, I try to help out with the rewrites during the week. So for me, my job is never done. I'm there all the time. But we'll check off lines like, oh, wow, like let's say for me, oh, you know, Ken didn't do so hot on that line. You know, either we rewrite that line or, oh, well, Ken, you could have acted it better if you had said it this way. So a lot of times, every writer will check off if they liked a certain any of the lines that you have in the script. They'll check off if they liked it, if they didn't, or if they thought it was performance-based and, you know, I could perform it better, something like that.
It's Dr. Ken. It's 7:30 Chicago time. If I got that, let me check my local listings. Kevin, you're my local listings. Yes. Dr. Ken, 7:30 Chicago time. Is that accurate?
Correct. Friday night, ABC.
Friday night on ABC 7. Andrea, say hi to Ken.
Hey, Ken. Loved you in all your movies. Having starred, though, in Big Mamas, Hangover 1, 2, and 3, and Knocked Up, will you ever let your daughters date?
I will defer to my wife. I will defer to my wife on that because I know how I get. I'll get overprotective, and I think that I thank goodness they have such a good mother, and I'll let my wife really, you know, weigh in on that on the details of their social lives and their dating lives. I'll look at the big picture of everything, you know.
You'll let her be the bad guy and say, no, you're not going out with him ever.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, we want to try to, it's so funny that Mr. Chow, the guy who played Mr. Chow, is saying this, but, you know, we want to try to normalize their lives as much as possible. I know everyone's unique, and I know my life is not normal per se, but we want them to kind of have, you know, to not have a showbiz kind of existence where, you know, we want them to enjoy life on their own and explore new things. I found comedy and acting when there's no comedians or actors in my family. And so the way I look at it, I tell my daughters all the time, you know, they're like 8 years old, you'll find something you'll love to do. You'll discover some talents that, you know, your mother and I would never have thought of doing, and it could be art. It could be anything.
Sure.
You know? So we try to normalize their lives, but also not be afraid to think outside the box for them.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of Mr. Chow, I'm sure your wife is pleased that you have a job now where you don't have to take your pants off constantly.
Yeah, she tells me that every day. She's like, you're not naked. I said, no, it's broadcast TV. Okay, good, I approve.
Good, so then go to work. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, go to work, yeah. Got your underwear. Oh, sorry, honey.
By the way, on Twitter, at Ken Jeong, KENJEONG. And by the way, the show is well worth your time. So take a look, sit down with your family,
thank you.
It up. At Ken Jeong, and we need a favor from you off the air, so hold the line. If you have time to help us out, it'll be great, because every time you do a favor for Steve Cochran, a hungry child is fed somewhere in Chicago. What? That doesn't make any sense. Hold the line, Dr. Ken, 7:30 Friday nights on ABC 7. He's a good dude.
He's great, and he's brilliant, too. Duke, Georgetown.
Yeah, he's very strong.
And Hollywood actor.
Very strong. I think specifically, I'm not sure of this, I think specifically, Dave, what his wife said was, there was somebody interviewed his wife, and I think she's a doctor as well. Could be wrong about that. But it said, isn't that a little weird that, you know, he's constantly taking his pants off? And there was a line attributed to her that was something along the lines of, well, now the rest of the women could be just as disappointed as I am.
Nice.
9:49, Bill and Wendy coming up, 7:20 WGN. I will live tweet the debate tonight. What time does the debate start? Do we know? Do we know?
7?
I wonder if we could move it up to around noon.
Ish. You going to watch the whole thing?
8 o'clock our time.
8 o'clock.
That's ridiculous.
Are you going to tweet the whole thing?
I'll you know what? I'll stick with it as long as I possibly can. The main debate stage once again features Rand Paul. Also on the main stage, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, the governor from Ohio, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, Senator Marco Rubio, and retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson. Trump, I still think he can't avoid it. I think he's going to show up at the last minute, and Fox and he will craft some sort of face-saving excuse on both sides.
What did we bet, $1 million?
Yeah, $1 million.
Okay.
Yeah. But for now, Ted Cruz has the center podium.
And
Ted Cruz is trying to be funny on the campaign trail. I sure hope he's funny tonight, because I love to tune in for the comedy stylings of Ted Cruz. The moderators tonight are Megyn Kelly, who is much more of a man than Donald Trump will ever be. And I think Brett Baer, and I forget who the third is. Is it Chris Wallace, maybe?
Maybe.
Yeah. The other candidates that you can watch out for, including Ohio Governor John Kasich, are looking for a strong enough showing in Iowa to have at least a little bit of heat going into New Hampshire, where Kasich and Christie both could surprise a few people. But you got to wonder how long Jeb Bush can hang on.
Yeah.
Jeb Bush, it was revealed this week in a Florida poll, a fairly reliable early poll in Florida. Jeb Bush, the former two-term governor of Florida, I think had 9% of the voters to Trump's 41%.
Right, in Florida.
In
his home
Florida.
State, yeah.
I think this Jeb Bush campaign is going to, they're going to look back at, like, remember when Rudy Giuliani in 2008 decided he'd skip Iowa, New Hampshire, and all the other early primaries, and he just started in Florida?
Yeah.
And everyone went, oh, really? You don't care about any of this? Well, we don't care about you in Florida. And he was done.
Exactly. Did you see the story, too? I think it was a Reuters story, how Jeb Bush would just blew through his money too quickly, too.
Yeah, well, he got to a point where he had this. Oh, I didn't know about that.
Yeah, big hotel.
Living it up?
Yep.
Okay, good. So that's your little preview for tonight. And again, I will live tweet the debate tonight starting at, did you say 9 o'clock? Oh, 8 o'clock. Yeah, it's 8 o'clock to me is midnight to the rest of you. So that'll be tonight. And remember, the later it gets, the more angry I get and the more bitter the tweets get. I mean, that's good times. Bill and Wendy are next on 720 WG. Hometown Voices tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll be live at Egg Harbor Cafe in Naperville.
That's a long drive for you.
Yeah.
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah, I'll be fine. I'll be fine.
Did the remote from your dining room fall through? They were going to do one from there.
I did. They asked me, they said, you got choices where you want to do the next Hometown Voices tour. And I said, my dining room in either the summer home or at the Double Wide in East St. Louis.
Sure.
They're both good.
And they picked the summer home.
Yeah. They're both strong.
That's great.
So the Allstate folks will be out there tomorrow. I'm told there'll be a special Egg Harbor breakfast creation called Very Berry Pancakes.
Mm.
At a special price for the WGN folks.
What sorts of berries, Steve, do we know?
Varied. Varied berries.
Oh, they'd be varied?
Yeah, they'd be varied berries. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's tomorrow morning between 6 and 10. Actually, Dave, you're going to be out there early.
I will. I'll be there. Mary will be out there. Yeah.
Mary, you're going to be out there early.
I will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, help set up.
Yeah. Are you the sous chefs?
They're going to start.
We're actually picking those varied berries.
They're going to start cooking our breakfast.
Yeah.
So that doesn't seem fair.
You got to do what you got to do. Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow at Egg Harbor Cafe in downtown Naperville. How are you guys?
Excellent, Steve. We just extended our agreement, Wendy and I, to do the show through tomorrow.
That's fantastic.
So
both shows?
It's good news.
Maybe.
It's good news.
Thank
good
you.
News. So you're going to be announcing that formally at some point?
A formal announcement later on, yes.
Yeah. Is there anything else you need from me at this point other than my undying support?
Just your love.
I love both of you.
All right.
Yeah. I have some breaking news on the berries. Strawberries, blackberries, and blueberries.
I told you the berries were buried.
Not my favorite berry, though.
Did I just say the berries were buried? Yes. I told you the berries were buried.
My favorite is the Halle Berry. I enjoy her work very much.
Strong.
I'd love to have.
I hear she's tasty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very, very much. Yeah. I didn't know I'd turned into Norm Crosby, but apparently I have. So I'll see you tomorrow live from Naperville. It's 10 o'clock. Here's Wendy.